Blog Talk Radio.
The following program is brought to you by Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Hi, I'm Wendy Marie.
Hi, I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life with your host, John Carosella. Today's featured guest is Wendy Marie, founder of Club Conscious and producer of A Shamanic Disco, Ecstatic Dance for Silicon Valley. With creativity coach and shamanic artist Annette Wagner, John explores offerings in part 6 of The Vision Plan. We'll also hear from Patricia Becker of Common Ground Palo Alto on sustainable gardening and growing your own food. Common Ground Palo Alto helps foster local growing and local eating. In spirit, muse, and song, well, stay tuned to be in on the surprise. Also on today's program, John will speak with Karen Armstrong, founder of the Shamanic Life online community. And Gina Carosella will share The Sensory Experience, a deep dive into the world of the senses. We're not just doing shamanism, we're living it. Come along with us. It's A Shamanic Life.
Welcome, everyone. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me to kick off tonight's show is Shamanic Life online community founder, Karen Armstrong. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's another exciting Tuesday night.
Yeah, it is another exciting Tuesday night. You know what? I am really excited about this show. Every time I line up the show, you know, and if we figure out who the guests are going to be, and I start getting the content and mm-hmm. doing the investigation, and, you know, some of the segments are pre-recorded and some of them are live, but I always find myself in this place of excitement about what we're going to share because it's always so cool to me. I love it. I'm really grateful to be doing this show.
I'm grateful you're doing the show. It's I am grateful because I learned so much about myself.
Me too.
With you at the helm of this whole process,
this crazy bunch of shenanigans. I know that I learned so much from my guests. Everybody I talk to is like, wow. And you know, this was not something that I was very good at for a very long time.
Weren't you good at?
I wasn't good at learning from other people. It was weird. I always had this thing where I was the smartest guy in the room.
You're kidding.
Oh, I was so obnoxious. It was terrible. Like, oh my God. So I'm, you know, it really, I had this huge breakthrough about a year. No, actually, it was only about 8 months before I left high tech where I finally got it that being the smartest guy in the room means you constrain your ability to learn from everybody else. Mm-hmm. And everybody has something to teach you. Everybody has something that, you know, if you pay attention to what they're doing or what they're saying or how they're walking their walk, you can learn some really cool stuff. And doing the radio show business is like, whew, I get to talk to really smart, really cool, really interesting people. I mean, you know, it's, you know, so Wendy Marie is on the show tonight. Ecstatic Dance. You know,
we love Ecstatic Dance, boy.
It's taken me a long time to understand Ecstatic Dance, and my body isn't quite in tune with it. I'm like a typical American guy who doesn't dance, you know, and.
Have you always been that way? Even when you
Well, I've always been musical, but there's something about translating the full movement into my body and processing energy through my body that I'm just not very good at yet. And
why don't you practice?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, because as Wendy says, you know, it's a practice. And it's more than just practice. It's more than just practicing dancing. It's practicing moving through the human experience and expressing it through your body. It's like,
yep,
it's like being conscious to the whole human experience. And mm-hmm. and Wendy's so articulate about this. And every time I listen to her, I just have to go back into the, wow, man, oh, man, do I have a long way to go. But thank goodness I got smart people around me who are helping. You know?
Well, I just know that there are a few men that like to just, you know, stand there and shake their head.
Few men?
Well, there's a lot more. I don't know what it is.
Well, I tell you, I had an experience about, really specifically about this. I was doing ceremony, and there was with one of our colleagues, Stevie Barsotti.
I love Stevie.
Yeah, he's so wonderful. I want to have him on the show. That he would be really fun. So let's put that in the list of things to do.
Okay.
And we were doing ceremony. We were drumming around these two carved totem poles. One was feminine and one was masculine. One had
just the two of you, or a whole bunch of people?
Well, we were at an event.
Oh, okay.
There was a bunch of people. But actually, Stevie and I were the only ones doing the drumming, I think, at this point. And I got the message, I asked the female icon, the female character that was carved on the pole, what do you need? That's what I said. I said, what do you need? Because, you know, the divine feminine and the feminine in our world is so kind of downtrodden and put upon.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that I got back from the divine feminine was that we need the men to learn to dance again.
Yeah, we do.
And I was just like, whoa, that's so deep and profound, that because I know what it's like to be a guy and not be comfortable really dancing.
Why is that, though? I mean, you play music, right?
Yes, I know. It's there's something about the vulnerability of dancing. I don't know why. I mean, we should probably get a whole bunch of guys together and talk about it and figure it out, because it's definitely something that is kind of frustrated and numbed in the masculine psyche, at least in this country.
Well, I agree, but like the Sufi dancers, I mean, Sufi dancers are pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually go in rhythmic movement to get to higher states of consciousness.
Yeah.
They just twirl.
Yeah. Well, I used to spin around and get dizzy when I was a little kid.
Yeah. That counts. But that's different, though,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that just like the ballerinas who do the twirling.
Yeah.
I don't know. You've got me going, wonder why so many men don't like to dance, why they feel so weird.
It's weird. It's uncomfortable, and it's a shame, too, because, you know, there's nothing more beautiful than beautiful dancing, you know?
Right. Have you tried taking dancing lessons with Deb?
I haven't. We've talked about it off and on, and we just never. I guess I've never made it a priority. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's kind of weird, but I don't think I'm the only one. Yeah, I'm sure it would be helpful.
No, you're not the only one. There's a lot of men that I would love to see at ecstatic dance, but there's no way that they would even show up. And if they do show up, they don't just let themselves go, even though there's 100 people at ecstatic dance, like on Sunday mornings.
Oh, yeah.
For a sacred circle. If I invited them and they get there late, then they're going to stay on the sidelines waiting for me to show up to bring them into the dance.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. But yeah. There's something to be said about the healing that needs to take place as far as that goes.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a big deal. And you know, I'm it's one of the reasons why I was excited to have Wendy on the show is because I think there's a lot to be learned from and through the I mean, and you'll hear in the interview, it's not just dancing. It's like a whole, it's a conscious, deeply conscious experience. So I can't wait to share that with everybody.
Yeah, it is conscious, just like rolling around the floor like a snake, or doing a dance like a bear, or
working with your power animals.
I don't know why it's easier for people to work with their power animals in that form than it is to just be in their human state in the middle world.
I think you don't have to be so you don't have to be so accountable, right? You don't have to be so visible and vulnerable, because you're not. It's not you. It's your power animal. But when it's just you, it's just you.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean that's what it is for me. That's how it feels for me.
Wow.
Pretty weird, huh?
Well, it is weird, but it's also, maybe it's about responsibility. I mean, why can't you go to an ecstatic dance and just start dancing your different power animals? Who would know that it wasn't you?
Good point.
Are you there for anyway?
That's right. Well, interesting.
I saw that there was a link to Wendy's website to an ecstatic dance adventure on the Big Island of Hawaii in December, and I was craving the ocean.
Oh yeah. Well, the ocean is how far away is Portland from the ocean?
About an hour and a half.
Oh, so it's you definitely have to plan for it.
Well, I have to plan for it. Yeah, and if your car is 20 years old and needs tires, it's not really something that you just get up and do.
And the Oregon coast is not exactly the Hawaii.
Well, it's not, but it is beautiful when it's sunny out. It's still the ocean, but it can be very, very cold and stormy. I can't go swimming in the ocean.
No, I like going down to Santa Cruz around here too, and I love the sound of the ocean and the rhythm and the crashing of the surface. This very, very powerful place for me to rest my consciousness. It's almost the only place where I truly rest is in the sound of the ocean.
I get it. It's very, very comforting.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So figure out a way to get to Hawaii and go to this thing.
I will. I'm working on it.
Cool.
You know me.
Yeah, well, adventure, every day is an adventure.
I know. Well, it's good to talk to you. I'm glad that we didn't talk about being seen and boundaries.
but we did.
We did before the show. If you guys could hear the show before the show.
It's quite a show. All right. Well, speaking of the show, why don't we get on with the rest of the show?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Karen. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Would you like to share your shamanic life with our audience? We're always looking for featured guests who aren't just doing shamanism, but living it. If you've got stories to tell, let us know. Your stories can illuminate the path for others. If you're interested, contact us at facebook.com/shamanic life or send a message to Karen Armstrong, KARYN at shamaniclife.com, or John Carosella, JC@fireflywillows.com. We're ready to listen.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me for today's program, our featured guest is Wendy Marie, and I'm so excited to have Wendy on the show. Wendy does something very special. She is the founder of a shamanic disco, and it's Shamanic Disco and Ecstatic Dance of Silicon Valley. Wendy creates safe, sacred space for people to express themselves, be seen and heard using tribal technologies like conscious ecstatic dancing and wisdom circles. She is the founder of a shamanic disco, that holds dance events throughout Silicon Valley, and she is also the founder of Club Conscious, a safe space for community to come together and renew life by reconnecting through ritual with self and others. So, Wendy Marie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So when I hear you sharing about Club Conscious and what we create together, the couple of things that come up for me that are really special is that we're doing it as community and we're returning to a way of ritual. And that combination is so powerful. And it's part of a cultural shift in Silicon Valley. And it's needed for our communities, for people to return home to ourselves and also to get connected with others.
So returning home to ourselves, that you, I hear you say that a lot. What does that, mean to you?
I think it means having an opportunity to get really involved in that space of who I really am, and to do that in a safe space, to return home, to be fully expressed in a safe way, where I can touch into my anger, my regret, my guilt, my joy, my celebration of life, my gifts of who I really am. And coming home into that place is a solid, core, rich place to live life from. And we don't have that in the ordinary pace of life in our culture. We don't have a safe space to come home and express fully and then return back into our workplace, our relationships, our families, fully expressed. And we've come home, and now I can come home with you, and we can do this thing together. So it's a pretty rich experience to hold a space for people to come home.
So coming home, you know, when we come home from work, right? I mean, most of us have this experience where we hold it together pretty well at work, and then we come home, and that's when we let down our facade of civility and allow ourselves to be the wounded people we are, and we have fights with the people we love, right? I mean, we usually don't have fights at work, but we often have fights at home. Is that an unconscious way of coming home? I mean, maybe.
Yeah, so we're physically coming home to a place that I think would be awesome if it was set up as a sacred space when we're transitioning through that doorway, that we are transitioning and compassionately for ourselves first. And first thing that I heard you say was, we're holding it together. What did you say? We're holding it together pretty well at work. I think that is a belief system that most of us live in. We think it's real, that we're actually holding it together pretty well.
Okay.
Do you actually believe that? And people actually live life thinking that I got this together, I'm holding it together. What are you holding together? That's, to me, the question that we need to explore and spend some time. What are you holding together? What is our country holding together? What are we holding together at work? And what if we weren't holding it together? What would happen? Or what if we were holding it together in a different way? Is this way of being really serving us as individuals, as a country, as a world globally?
So let's say,
is it time to change that?
Let's ask that question. What are we holding together when we successfully navigate a day at work, or a week, or a month, or a year, or 10 years? What are we holding together?
Yeah, and I feel my face and my teeth clenching up, my fists kind of, because I feel that a lot of people are putting a lot of energy and effort into holding something up that maybe doesn't feel in alignment for them, and there needs to be something else in there with it, you know, compassion and empathy and realness of people's feelings.
Well, I mean, let's give credit to what we actually are holding together, right? We're holding together the ability to feed our families, right? And
a lot of monetary.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, feed, clothe, shelter, educate, right? But you're right. We expend an extraordinary amount of energy that goes beyond those fundamental needs. And what is that? What is it that we're holding together?
A lot of distraction.
Is it? And it's a lot of, one of the reasons that ecstatic dance is so interesting, the shamanic disco that you put on,
is that that's a place where you go to, or where, you know, I think you encourage people to look at what you're not expressing, what you're holding underwater or holding, you know, keeping in your pocket or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These tensions and stresses that compromise, that the not expressing those things compromises your experience as a human.
Yeah, I definitely feel that it comes out sideways if we don't spend some time and some energy consciously exploring those parts of ourselves. Those parts, that music, movement, the exploration of space and connection and gravity bring up for us in a shamanic way, and you don't have to be skilled or taught how to do it. We're all in these bodies and we're all having a human experience and a spiritual experience. So creating a safe space where we can bring all of that together so that we can go back to work as a whole person, functioning in our wholeness. That's that piece about coming home.
Mm. So you mentioned the notion that one of the things that we're doing besides taking care of our basic needs is distracting ourselves. What's the consequence of that?
Schizophrenia comes up for me, like this kind of schizo experience in life, you know, like you're hearing about so many people being medicated now, right, to cope with these symptoms. Instead of listening to the symptoms, we're being medicated. Calm your symptoms down, which is causing something else to go on. So we're constantly stuffing so that we can live into this concept that we're holding it together. Because if we don't, how are we going to feed our families?
Yeah, so we're not really holding it together.
I don't feel like we are. We are. There is a service, like you said, that neither one is bad or good. And both, if we get too involved in either one, can be an escape system. Too involved in spirituality can be an addiction. So anything, work can be an addiction. A distraction from what? So creating space where people can fully express, ride the arc, the full arc of human and spiritual experience.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal. You talk about that a lot, and I think it's kind of an essential part of the medicine that you bring, and that is that we have to ride the whole ride. We have to allow ourselves to feel the anger, the frustration, the dismay, the despair, the pain and the suffering, if we're going to understand what's really going on in our lives and in our world, I guess. Would you say that that's...
It's an invitation to heal and recover. So if nobody else knows that's going on with me, and I can also stuff it through work or other addictions, it'll never get healed. It'll never be exposed. And I think one of the biggest things in our society is that we have to do this alone. And we're not alone. We're not alone. And in a conscious space, a sacred space where people are safe to express, you can start getting the reality that you're not alone. Others are feeling this. Others are experiencing this. Whoa, we're all human. Got it.
Mm.
We're living a human life together is what we're doing. And so having space to fully express brings people together. We start waking up. We start waking ourselves up. We start waking others up. What I really heard you say is this. How I really see you is this. And how do we know that? Because we're starting to feel it and experience it. So it's really waking people up, coming home to a fully expressed experience as a human body and a spiritual experience.
So is that what Club Conscious is? What is Club Conscious? What's the idea behind Club Conscious?
Club Conscious for me has been a calling, specifically in Silicon Valley, as what comes up for me is it's a cultural shift. It's to create more wholeness in our valley grew from orchards and communities and people taking care of each other. And now it's empowered also in a way that's new, and we're learning to harness the power of technology. It's still new to us, and it's so powerful, and it's created such speed and a form of creativity that needs to be also managed and harnessed with our feelings attached as well, to bring that intelligence in and that balance of the valley. Mm. So Club Conscious is a safe space in a building where people can come and express through conscious dancing, where there's no alcohol, no drugs. Conscious dancing where they can learn to process and really be with themselves and with others in this reality of our human experience and our spiritual being. And it's intended to be a service to community and also to create a safe space for communities to come together about the things that we really, really care about and to make change together and to be able to hear and see each other and to be heard and to be seen. What's it like to give and receive both that depth of being heard and being seen? We don't get that out there in the fast-paced world. And when somebody does pause long enough to breathe with you or to see with you or to hear with you and to create our senses fully alive and do that exchanging, it's healing. So it's not only healing for individuals, it's healing as a community, and it's also a global movement to heal globally.
There's a lot in what you just said, but something that I want to focus on a little bit more is the how is it healing? What is it that shifts in people when we get to this place where we can express and not be stuffing these experiences, you know, in our suit coat pockets and, you know, because I think, you know, in theory it sounds great, you know, but the reality of it is that it's actually difficult. We're so out of practice being genuine with the entire range of our feelings in a way that can be received by someone other than your spouse, for example. It's hard to do. It becomes a challenge just to engage in the process.
Yeah.
So what is being healed when you engage in this process?
Yeah. So I hear you sharing the word practice, which is key. It will require practice. I often refer to the movement practice or circle as a weekly practice. When people engage in it on a regular basis, just like church or prayer, or some people go to the watering hole every night after work.
Right.
It's a practice. You develop a habit. You develop awareness. You receive the medicine. You give it to other people. So it's definitely a practice. Also, I think there's a big story behind this reality of being authentic. The barrier of it takes time and it takes energy, and I just don't have anything left of me at the end of the day to give to this practice. And what are we giving away by believing in that story? And the reality is that a moment of moments, just a brief moment of movement or breath, can shift an entire perspective of thinking. So although it can require weekly practicing, there are moments that create magical shifts when we take the time, just a brief moment of consciousness, of feeling in a sacred space that allows the depth. So there's a lot of depth in these containers. So most people experience, before walking into the space, they're already experiencing fear, resistance, their stories, why they want to run, and all the stuff they want to fix. And that's a big process to move through right there, often coming through the doorway of a conscious dance space or a tribal technology space that is inviting you in to drop into your depth. So also a lot of stories are going to come up that are going to resist, that come from a shadow side. Mm. They're going to tell you all the reasons why you should not heal, you should not feel, and you definitely shouldn't drop into this place. A lot of shadow stuff and a lot of story, like it's too hard, it's challenging, I don't know how to do it. And I want to encourage people to escape the stories of what's created this trapping and this distraction from our depth and our connection to self and others. Just let those stories go.
It's almost hard to even understand the premise that we're disconnected from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because so much of, honestly, I think it's because so much of ourselves are disconnected. You know, it keeps happening for me that greater and greater sensitivity to what I'm experiencing unfolds, the more attention I give it,
mm-hmm.
right? The ability to feel subtle things in my body, to sense subtle eddies that blow through my moods. It's like the thickness of my of the veils before my eyes was much thicker than I thought they were. They were much thicker than I thought they were, and it's almost impossible to imagine how sensitive one can be to the nature of oneself until you start the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that all those sensitivities are alive, they're there, but we're shutting them down.
Yeah.
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 And most people, when you share that, what comes up for me is most people are afraid to open, to be authentic, to feel. And when I ask people, you know, what is your biggest fear? What will happen? And they express what they think will happen if they feel. The reality is you're already living that fear. You've already created it. You are living in it.
All right, so let's take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about the idea that we are actually living the fear that we're trying to avoid. So we'll be right back.
We hope you're enjoying today's program. You can find archives of A Shamanic Life and our other thoughtful and provocative programs at blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Check out Convergence, John's monthly radio magazine where science and mysticism meet, the third Sunday of every month, or one of our other interesting shows and their interesting hosts, blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Come join us.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. I'm speaking with Wendy Marie about all kinds of things related to ecstatic dance, full expression of the human experience, and conscious living. And before the break, we were talking about how people are afraid to enter the space because they're kind of like, because they have fears. And you mentioned that they are often, you know, when they express those fears, you note that a lot of the times they're actually living those fears. They've created those fears in their lives. Tell us about that.
Yeah, a lot of times people are inspired to come into a conscious dance space or a sacred tribal technology space to explore because they've been invited in through life circumstances. Either one of their biggest fears has happened, a trauma in life, and they're ready to start healing and they're ready to start exploring and discovering more about who they really are and get into some depth and connection. Or they're scared, and either way they're scared usually when they come in that door.
Yeah.
Or there's some fear around living a life that they just, there's something out of alignment, things are not working, and they're not sure what that's about, and they're ready to do something about it, and they don't know what to do. So they're also in a rediscovery process of who they really are. And then thirdly, what I experience is usually people are already in a spiritual practice. Dance, movement, tribal technologies, sacred wisdom circles are their main spiritual practice. And they're so excited that this now exists in Silicon Valley. And they slide right in and dive right into their experience.
Mm.
Those three places. Fear of losing an intimate relationship because now you're going to start diving in and find out who you really are. That could change everything. It could change your marriage. It could change your job. It could change your relationship with everything in this entire world.
Wow,
it could change your relationship with the way that you put your hands on the dinner table.
Right.
The way that you look at a flower, the way that you see lightning, the way that you see your spouse, the way that you see yourself. That could be pretty scary for people.
Do they sense that coming in? I mean, do they have a sense that, wow, this could be...
I think there is a sense. And I think that some people often, you know, very few people, I think, have this experience where we call it being cracked open. And being cracked open is a lot about getting into that depth of transformation. You know, similar to we talked about, it's important for people to get in connection with themselves and connection with others. And that way of living can be very scary if we've lived disconnected or we're already in our habits that are formed through, you know, going to work or being drugged all the time or whatever it is, that we're already connected in that way so strongly in this habit-forming way, then cracking open and becoming any different than that can be scary. It feels life-threatening.
Yeah.
But anything that needs to be put back together usually has to be taken apart and disconnected. For instance, if I unplugged this microphone right now, something else would be created. Something else would get connected, or we would reconnect this microphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different moment. It might seem like it's the same, but we're going to be in a different moment. And we're reconnecting in a different moment. And just that change alone of disconnecting and reconnecting is creating and co-creating together another experience.
Well, it creates.
We went through a little bit of fear and concern together. We're going through a little bit of celebration because we're reconnecting, which is very similar to experience sacred and safe space, where you get to fully express yourself, where you get to disconnect from your stories and your beliefs and your trainings and your habits and find out what else is there and reconnect. Just like playing Legos when we were kids. You decide, this house isn't as good as I wanted, or it's ugly, or I like it, but I want to build something different. You know, all the reasons that we take our Legos apart and put them back together is pretty much the same thing about taking our lives apart or what's already disconnected and putting it back together.
And we get to choose and experience a freedom in the disconnection and kind of an exaltation or an ecstasy in the reconnecting.
Yeah, if you're willing to ride that fullness of the expression and the creativity and be willing, and there's some courage involved usually, and there's a lot of support in these spaces. I heard a 16-year-old recently danced with us on a Sunday morning, and he said to me, "Yeah, I got it out. Thank you."
Wow.
Very tribally connected, knew his business he had to take care of in there, and he said, "I got it out of me." And what those kids also shared was the reality that they're either in school, in a system that's telling them what to do, when to do it. They are either in front of a TV or on a computer. So having access to a place where you can express and be. And again, he naturally dropped into his purpose there.
Yeah.
I got it all out.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So... how did you get into this? How did you? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this?
I don't know what happened. I'm laughing. Inside, I'm laughing this whole story. I got kidnapped by aliens? No, there's no aliens. I don't. And I have people to ask me often, "Do you believe in aliens?" I'm like, I don't believe in anything, and I imagine everything. And why I say that is I like to create an experience with others that there's room for us to grow. If I believe in something, I'm trapped.
Oh, that's very good. You're right. Right.
So that's what that's about. Something else that I want to share is the other day, just this discovering the words put together in this way, that if we are doing the work of waking up and living fully, we're working. If we're not doing that work, we're getting worked. So take your pick.
So
a lot of these people enter into this space because they're tired of getting worked.
Yeah. I got some advice from one of my spirit guides that said, choose or the way will be chosen for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So either you're doing your work by awakening to your conscious presence and your becoming conscious of your actions, or you're running on somebody else's program. Mm. Right.
Yeah. It feels like that to me.
It feels like that to me too. Okay, but you didn't answer the question.
What was your question again?
Sorry,
it gets so exciting inside my body. It's hard not to get distracted.
How'd you get into this?
I want to say that just flat out, the story is that it was a calling. It was a calling. I was experiencing my own struggles probably up through my mid-30s.
So when you were a little girl, you didn't imagine doing dance?
I did dance as a little girl, and I talked to my stuffed animals, and they talked back to me, and the grass talked to me, and somewhere along the line, all that stuff started to shut down probably when I started school, and I was expected to think and be a certain way. And throughout the years, I just felt more and more shut down and more lost and disconnected from myself, There felt like there was a huge piece of me missing. Probably the majority of me was missing. And then some wake-up calls along the way just deepened my journey. The death of my father, holding his hand while it went cold, seeing things in those moments, visions that showed up that I get scientifically maybe even shouldn't have been there, didn't exist, but that was my experience. Also supporting someone through a psychotic break. And in that moment, understanding that if we're to fall into the story and treat her as she's wrong and something is wrong with her and there's something to fix and somewhere to run to, then we could have been in some trouble that would have created a worse scenario for her. What I experienced in her, what they called a psychotic break in the hospital, was that what she really needed to be heard and seen in her real experience. It's real for her. And as long as I'm not judging it to be real or not real, and I allow her to have her experience and express it in a safe way. So in that moment, it just created a safe container because I was in so much fear of what was going to happen to her that I stepped forward in a very fierce and passionate and loving way and really leaned into her and said, "You're safe. Share with me what's happening for you, what's real for you." And there's a common term that people are constantly using that I feel a little irritated when I hear it is, what's your truth? What's true for you? Mm. And I recently sort of uncovered why I feel so bothered by that saying.
Why?
I don't feel that people share truth. We share real experiences, experiences that are real for us. To me, spirit speaks truth. That's my experience right now. And that I do find the freedom that people get from being heard and seen in their real experience, that it doesn't have to make sense. And if I stop judging you and I just listen to you and hear you, you can be set free. You just need to be heard and seen.
Why is that so powerful? What is it that unlocks? What is it that transforms when someone's experience is acknowledged?
There's a relief. There's a relief for both sides because now that person feels understood. And now I feel like, wow, I got the gift of understanding them and being in that depth with them. And now there's this connection that we're the same. You know that oneness that people speak about? I know that when somebody doesn't try to fix my anger and they don't try to change me in that moment, but they just say, wow, I hear you. You sound angry. I'm experiencing your anger right now. And they just let it be. Then it can start transforming into something else.
That's interesting. I wonder why that works. I mean, I acknowledge that it works. I've been shown that that's a very powerful path for healing.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a mystery.
It can be a mystery. I feel like when I experience it, it doesn't feel like a mystery at all. It feels so real, so authentic. This is who we are meant to be as people, as a community, as a world living together. This is who we're meant to be. Mm. This is that piece about returning home. Because if I can learn to do that for you, I can learn to do it for my family, I can learn to do it for a stranger, it doesn't matter who you are or who I think I am. We can now meet in that place. And that's healing, not just for me or for you, but on a global level. That's healing.
Well, for sure. I mean, I think one of the things that constantly frustrates our ability, despite our best intentions, our ability to make positive change in the world is the sense that we have to fix something.
Yeah.
As opposed to help someone. You know, because it's all about meeting people where they are and understanding the needs that they're experiencing. And then empowering them to fulfill those needs or showing them how those needs are a function of some other thing that's happening that can, if that's fixed, then they don't have to have those needs anymore.
Yeah.
Right. They don't have to suffer needing that anymore.
Yeah. And returning to that concept that this is a practice and we all have access to that. Every human being has access to that healing for themselves and for others. If we can learn to express from that safe place, all of our feelings, the anger, the joy, the celebration. I mean, in some places it's not safe to even celebrate. You do a deal at work. Who's celebrating? You know, is anybody ringing a bell? You see everybody like jumping up and down and screaming and yelling and taking a shamanic ride on a roller coaster, like on that high together. That's healing. Now we're celebrating together. Now we're meeting each other where we really are. That's the real experience, right? Like, and if more of that were happening, that authenticity, that reality, it takes one person to shift the room, to shift the vision, to shift the momentum.
Yeah, but we're not comfortable. But we're so not comfortable allowing that to be part of our experience, which is kind of dumb.
Hmm.
Oh, like it's all.
Oh. We're a little bit caught up in that. Yeah, a little bit caught up in that as a culture of that fear, and for. Most people in our culture, it takes a little Jägermeister or a little tequila, and we have lost touch with the medicine of our authenticity.
Mm.
We don't need that. We don't need tequila, and we don't need the Jägermeister. And how do I know this? I used to drink to lose my inhibitions. And now to do it consciously, that's the freedom. I didn't get freedom from alcohol.
Yeah. Well, okay, so how did you said it was a calling, but how did you find it? How did you find dance? How is dance the calling?
Mm. Like about 3 years ago, I was invited to Ecstatic Dance Oakland.
Mm.
So it seemed really weird to me. I was invited to a dance in the morning on a Sunday, and I felt exposed and I felt a little bit concerned and fearful of going into a dance space, one, without drinking alcohol. There's no alcohol allowed, no drugs. Two, I'm not going to dress up and get all my girl stuff on.
Right.
And three, I'm going to dance however I want in the daylight. So there's no darkness, there's no alcohol, and I don't have all my fluff to distract, and there's no Western culture.
There's no performance display.
Yeah, I'm not there to attract somebody. I'm not there to be attractive. I'm totally exposed, and what am I going to do? I have no idea.
Hmm.
So I did go ahead and go into the space shy, feeling shy. So the first thing is dancing with my shyness, dancing with my unwillingness. And where in life am I actually living that out? My shyness is keeping me from being real. It's keeping others from experiencing my fullness in this world. That's the disabling of this system that we're running that comes from doubt and fear and shadow.
Okay. So
dance frees us up from that. So I have to move through that if I'm really going to be myself, if I'm really going to move in an authentic way. So yeah, I befriended the music and I let the music start inspiring me. I let the people create safety for me. I could see that they were there with intention and purpose to free themselves as well and to experience connection, depth, spirituality. You know, there's people grieving in the space at an altar, crying, other people supporting somebody, other people laughing and dancing and creating joy and celebrating life. So all of it's welcome there. So it didn't take much time for me to connect with the authenticity of this. This is what I always wanted in my life. This is how I always wanted to live.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In that freedom and that authenticity and to be able to share with my family and my friends real. This is what I am right now. Here's who I am right now. And to be in a place that accepts all those ranges of me. So it was pretty profound. And so I returned back home, and which is about an hour away from Oakland, closer to Silicon Valley in the South Bay area. And I just felt so deeply empowered, inspired, and called in to create this in Silicon Valley. This has to be. People need this. I needed this. More
mm-hmm.
people need this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely life-changing for me on a spiritual journey as well as a human embodied journey. Woke me up to something that I've always felt a deep calling for that nothing else ever served me in this way. No drugs or alcohol, no work, no church, no nothing ever woke me up in this way because there was always something to stop me from my fullness. Sit like this, talk like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Learn like this, be like this. So to have a safe space to express and inspired by amazing music that challenged my movement, that inspired my movement, which to me, for example, in the shamanic disco, when I DJ, it's all about the music. It's not like, oh, you like that music? Great, I did a good job. I'm not there to create great music for you to move to and feel completely inspired because that's not real life. I want to challenge you. so that you can drop into new ways of being, and then you can take that out in the world, whether it's in your workplace and you're feeling challenged, that you can find your rhythm and bring it into that challenge. And that it doesn't have to look or feel like you think it was going to, that you can drop your expectations and find this deeper way of being in life. And that's what the dance teaches.
Hi, this is John Carosella, your host for A Shamanic Life. I hope you're enjoying the show. I love creating this show and sharing our guests with you. If you'd like to support the show, your contributions in any amount are gratefully received. If you'd like to help, send your contribution via PayPal to ASL@fireflywillows.com. That's ASL@fireflywillows.com. Sincerely, and with love and light, I thank you.
So this has been a fairly quick path for you. 3 years.
I feel like offended because it's been really hard work.
No, I'm sure it's been really hard work, right? But in terms of time, right,
I like hearing that. I'd like to buy into that story. I'm going to try that on, that it has been quick. I get what you're saying. I think what you're saying is the quick path, meaning I dropped into dance and it just lit me up and transformed me. And it took me like a wave, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to surf, but do they?
Go out
and try to surf,
exactly,
because the waves are there and you can ride them, you know, and there's all kinds of waves to ride.
So this took you up quickly.
Took me up quickly. I started it in a little teeny yoga center with three people and a boom box on this crummy carpet, like disgusting flattened out carpet that looks like somebody left an iron on it and people sweated on it. We started out with three people. Anyway, we ended up moving into a larger space because the community was calling for it, and the shift really was pushing me to transform what I'm doing with and co-creating with community. It was just sort of this pull.
And your style, by the way, and every time I've participated in the experience that you produce, it's a very generous style. It's a very... it's a gift first kind of place. And I think that's something that's, first of all, I want to commend you for that. And I'm excited that I get to bear witness to that.
Mm. Sweet.
But it's also a powerful reminder that when we serve, when we really serve without ego, right? We bring our gifts and serve without ego. We're guided by what supports us, and you know, you started at a little tiny space and a very small crew, and now you're doing something much bigger and much more, you know, serving many, many more people.
Yeah, and I'm really, you know, we're just now. I often say we've only just begun. And that feels really real for me. I mean, now we're dancing within Silicon Valley, which is just so mind blowing that people are having this experience. People are waking up. People are coming together. Like, communities are forming, and we're building bridges where there were gaps before. This didn't exist. It was a big gap. And there's 50, 60, 80 people now coming together weekly.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so, and sharing deeply.
So along the way, you know, either as you were being prepared by spirit for this walk, or when you started this walk, you must have had some remarkable challenges that you had to face. Can you care to share one or two?
Yeah, and I feel a little hesitant to put the stamp of remarkable on them, because there's people who have survived wars and left death camps and by miracle and their own efforts, and so it almost seems silly, the stuff that I live through or live into on my own life journey. So I just want to honor like our ancestors and the people who have created this safe earth for us to express our creativity, because we didn't always have this available to us.
Hmm.
The death of my father is probably the first really profound experience, holding his hand while it went cold and visions coming through in those moments. Also experiencing the power of community, people just showing up in those hard times, just being there is so healing. To know that I'm loved, my family's loved, my dad is loved. So I see the power of that. And that's piece of what we're creating together, that remembering, that coming home. Experiencing loved ones, you know, involved with horrific drugs, drowning out feelings, me getting to experience the darkness and the depth of that, the power of
we talked about this a little bit before we started today.
Yeah,
the power of
I really can't put words to the demons inside of the chemical of meth and what happens to a person. And so to see a death through distraction, especially somebody that I love dearly, and this is somebody who would do anything to protect me, and to take care of me. And so to see the damage that they create for themselves, their own life, was just so, could be devastating. And to see the work that it takes for somebody like that to be seen. And I wonder if they were met at ground zero and somebody held sacred space for them and said, hey, what's up? What's really going on? That you don't have to know what's going on. Somebody just saying that to you, because there's this desperate place that happens that disables us from reaching out to anybody because we don't know what to ask for. There's a deeper, darker place that holds us intimately. And if we entertain it from that place without saying, hey, I'm at ground zero, I don't know what the heck I need, I'm hurting so bad, I just need to tell somebody, and you're it, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And take it from there. There's that deep, dark, intimate depression, distraction, killing the pain that will just eat up every part of you, and it has the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that that darkness exists and how far it spreads through your family, through the people that you know, how it affects energetically so much of what's going on in our world, I see the depth and the darkness of the healing that needs to be done in our culture. And I also see people recover from those places through tribal technologies, through space, to be heard and to be seen and to relearn and practice. How do we take care of ourselves? How do we allow others to see us in our dark times and say, hey, I don't know what I need, but it's dark for me right now.
Yeah. Well, huh. So you're not afraid of, you have a healthy respect for it, but you're not afraid of those shadowy places.
I wouldn't say I'm afraid of it. What happens for me when I experience that darkness is I want to rise up. First, I want to hit it in the face, and I want it to get like, yeah, that's real for me too. And I'll meet you there. Let's have it out. And then we're going to rise above.
Mm.
Because once shadow hits that light, right? So I'm willing to risk whatever that shadow wants me to believe is a risk. And that kind of coyote energy, that trick, that story, I'm going to call BS on that.
Mm.
It's like playing cards with the dark side.
Right.
And I know the dark can retreat, and I know the light can shine. So it's sort of that game of energy.
Well,
you
yeah,
know, it's like a dog fight in the sky, right? Like, you want to play, baby? You know, and the fun part of it for me is it is spiritual and emotional. So I don't feel physically at harm.
Mm.
I don't know if I'd be so brave to go up against somebody physically. I'd like to dream that I could be that powerful. But I also make fun of myself. You know, I'm 5'2" and I've got Welsh blood in me. And so,
oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, that fiery little terrier mutt. So yeah, I'm a Welsh shaman. So, you know, I'm super fierce. And sometimes that works for me and others, and sometimes it works for me and others. And why I say that is whether it's uncomfortable or not, there's always a gift, there's gold in it, you know, and I often will use my fierceness to wake somebody up just out of my own frustration, you know, and maybe if it hurts a little bit when I deliver it, maybe I'll pull out a bigger sword, you know, I'm not going to kill you, but I might cut you, you know, and you can blame me for hurting you, or you can wake up in the reality of your experience. You can get out of blame, shame, judgment, you know, and so sometimes that fierceness, I think, could it could use a little training and grace.
Couldn't we all?
So, and I share with people, I'm in it with you, you know, in all my humanness, and people will say, hey, can I ask you a question? I'm like, absolutely, you can ask me a question. I have no answers. You know, so I mean, this is a journey that I'm excited and honored to be in with community, because I think that's what's missing for all of us, is people who can ride the dark and the light together. Okay. And what the billboards have told us is something differently. It's like, do you have white teeth and perky breasts and, you know, do your eyebrows just pluck perfectly? Then life's okay. But no, it's not.
Mm. All right. So what's next for Club Conscious and Ecstatic Dance and Shamanic Disco? What's going on? What's the plan?
Yeah. So the vision holds a space, a building for community in Silicon Valley, a safe space where there's ritual and sacred space facilitated, where people, it's an all-inclusive space, so it does not, it's not about age. We dance with kids on Sunday morning, and that has been such a gift, and families, watching them dance together and come together in the most profound, beautiful, natural ways. So it holds a space that's all inclusive. It doesn't disregard religion. It doesn't disregard sex. It doesn't disregard age. And so it is all inclusive. What it does require is that we all respect the people and the space in it. That is one of the biggest guidelines. It holds a space for tribal technologies through conscious dancing, movement, medicine, music. It holds a space for, wisdom circles. Also holds a space. I have this experience in my life of yoga really recovering me into a deeper connection, an embodied connection, also a spiritual practice.
Yeah, me too.
And awareness. So I am saddened that in our culture that we have to pay so much money to be taught how to take care of our bodies. And so I want to honor the culture and all people in that way, that there's donation yoga available, and that the people that can afford to pay and have an abundance monetarily, we can support that, and we can help others who can come and practice yoga morning and noon after work, whatever it is, but that it's there for reasonable times for people as well. So it is a space for healing. It's a space for coming together. It's a healing arts, and it's going to allow space for that vision to be co-created by the people as it's called in and as we create it together. That's the small big picture. The big picture is it's a nationwide project the people, where it's needed, have access to safe, sacred space in all communities where it's needed.
And the protocol of creating that sacred space is understood and facilitated and nurtured.
Yeah. And the facilitators are here. They're ready. They've been trained through their own personal lives and also special training. The people are here. It's getting really full. And we need a space. We need a space in Silicon Valley that's accessible to everybody.
So for those of you out there who are listening who have the means to help us out with this endeavor, Wendy's your gal.
yeah. And there is support on board right now coming together. And I would love to hear from anybody. Even if you just feel inspired or curious, feel free to connect with me on the website at clubconscious.org. And I'm happy to entertain exploring ideas that you might have, or if you just feel inspired to support the vision.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So we're about out of time. Is there anything you'd like to share?
So much. And I think what I want to share is I want to share the journey. I want to share continuing opening up space for people and creating more of this authenticity within each individual so we can just keep rippling it out and sharing it and holding the space for community and the shift of Silicon Valley.
Cool. Well, I think those of us who live in and around Silicon Valley benefit a lot from the work you're doing. And so keep it up.
Thank you. There is one more thing I want to share.
Absolutely.
There's an organization called Fractured Atlas, and they sponsor Club Conscious as a community arts and charitable offering. So we are not officially a nonprofit, but we are sponsored in a way that we can receive tax-deductible donations. And I set that up for people so that they can get something for what they give monetarily. So that's pretty special, and I think it's a new way of being in a system to help artists and individuals who want to be there for a community.
Right. And so how do folks get to Fractured Atlas? What's the way to...
They can go on the website on the homepage of clubconscious.org.
Oh, okay.
Or you can also go to fracturedatlas.org and look up Club Conscious.
Okay.
And a lot of this is in development. Our website as well as the site on Fractured Atlas, everything's in development.
Okay. So we have lots more to look forward to and an opportunity to provide our own gifts and support in this process.
Yeah.
Cool. And if folks want to get to you and learn more about you and your work, is Club Conscious the place to go?
Yep. Or you can find me on Facebook as Wendy Marie, and that's M-A-R-I-E. And I'm happy to communicate with you there as well. Or you can join Ecstatic Dance Silicon Valley on Facebook. It's a group.
All right. Great. And where do we dance? Where can we
Wednesday nights, we dance at the History Club of Los Gatos, which is a beautiful, large wood floor to move freely and gather with community and close in a closing circle as well. And then Sunday morning, so Wednesday night is a shamanic disco, and Sunday mornings is Sacred Grooves. It's also a weekly practice, and that's at Lucy Stern Community Center in Palo Alto, and it's a really beautiful ballroom. Both of these spaces have some ancestry in them and some intention for community.
Awesome.
Gathering together. It
cool.
is awesome.
All right. Great. Wendy, thank you so much for joining us on the Shamanic Life.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
At Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us. Host a show or be a guest. Or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable changemakers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And now we're going to shift into a new segment. Joining me now to share a little practical activism with us is Patricia Becker. Patricia has been with Common Ground Organic Garden Supply and Education Center in Palo Alto since 1993. She first served as Educational Programs Manager, and then in 2000 she became the Center Manager. Patricia spent several years living and working at Hidden Villa Organic Farm and Wilderness Preserve, and she's a previous Ecological Farming Association board member. Patricia is currently on the Ecological Farming Conference Planning Committee. She participates with the Peninsula Macrobiotic Community. Additionally, Patricia has a special talent for teaching Anusara Yoga and macrobiotic dietary guidelines in an easy and practical way. Patricia, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
So, you know, it says Common Ground Garden Supply and Education Center, but it feels like something way more than that.
Well, that's good, because we feel that it's way more than that, too. Well, we're a nonprofit, and we've been in Palo Alto for 42 years.
Wow.
So we have a huge community of supporters and people who are grateful that Common Ground's been on the Mid-Peninsula this long. And the classes that we teach are primarily based on grow biointensive methods.
And that means what?
Well, grow biointensive is methods that John Jevons developed with other people, and they're all described in the book called How to Grow More Vegetables.
And it sounds like it's such a simple simple thing to have a book about, but
yeah.
So that's been around a while, that book, I imagine.
Yes, it has, almost as long as our organization.
Wow. So so Common Ground's, what is the goal of Common Ground?
To educate as many people as possible about how to grow their own food sustainably and garden sustainably, whether it be natives or ornamentals or herbs. And we also have things around the fringes of soul, you know, sustainable living classes like gray water and yoga. And this Saturday, June 1st, we're having a class on wild plants as food, medicine, and soil indicators. So we have things that for people who aren't just specifically gardeners, too.
And there's something happening in July.
Yes.
The 7th Annual edible landscaping tour. Tell us about that.
Oh, that's our premier event of the year where we get hundreds of people signed up and you get a booklet of 10 gardens plus the Common Ground Garden, and it's a self-guided tour. People can go around and see all 11 gardens, or they can read through the booklet and say, oh, I'll just see these 9 and spend more time at these 9 and skip those, and you just go at your own pace, and then you go to the gardens, and you can look around as long as you want, and you can talk to the gardeners, and you get so many wonderful ideas, inspirations, small gardens, big gardens. They're all just individual expressions of wonderful people growing food.
Well, I think the thing that's fascinating here is that it's also beautiful.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes.
I mean, this is landscaping, right? And you know, I have a neighbor who was a house on the tour, had their garden was on the tour, and every time I go over to their place, I'm just overwhelmed by the sense of the aesthetic pleasure that I get from seeing all these plants that are also food. It's
yes.
Amazing.
Exactly. So, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
It just seems like if people are going to spend time in their yard and garden, or even pay people to garden for them, why not grow food or grow things that you can bring in and eat at your dinner time, or things that you can make tea out of, or plants that are made, you know, native, that have medicinal value. It's just so exciting.
It is exciting. And you know what? I think the thing that there's something special that happens here. And that is that in addition to the beauty and the economy associated with growing your own food, when I practice growing my own food and creating that, you know, creating the food as part of the landscape of my environment.
Yes.
I get into a kind of deeper relationship with the cycles of nature, with the seasons, and
yes.
with the plants themselves, with the whole vibration, so to speak, the whole gestalt of what it means to be a plant. And it's a very cool kind of give and take kind of thing. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like I have dogs and cats at home, but
mm-hmm.
I also have companion plants. I don't just have companion animals, I have companion plants. You know, and when my lemon tree is in abundant fruit, or the cherries are awesome on the cherry tree, it's more love. It really is more love all around.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's something that people don't they don't always get when they approach it from the perspective of, well, you know, I can spend less money at the grocery store.
Well, they can do that, and there's so much more to it, like you were explaining. I feel like it's a connection to your soil, to your land, to the cycles of the seasons, the cycles of the earth, and connection to your food. Wow, I grew this, and how much better something tastes, like the lemons from your tree taste than the lemons that you don't know where they came from, that they're on the grocery shelf. So
it's
that
absolutely
connection.
True. Absolutely true that the food you grow yourself tastes way better.
mm-hmm.
And I think part of that might be because you have connection to it and you've grown it yourself. And partly it's because it's fresh. I mean,
yes.
The idea of really, literally fresh, like it was in the garden either
yes.
this morning or 15 minutes ago, and now it's in my salad or, you know, in my stir fry. Like, it's so much better. It's amazing.
Yes, yes. And so we like to teach people how to do that. That's our primary focus. That's our primary goal. We just had a class, John, this past Saturday, how to start your veggie garden. And at Common Ground, the classroom's in the back, and we have our offices and our center with the supplies in front. Well, we just heard so much laughing coming out of the classroom. It was just so wonderful. The teacher was saying, she was talking about all the mistakes she's made. and everybody was just laughing.
Gardening.
We just learn from our mistakes, and we have fun, and we explore, and we look at it as a fun adventure.
I think that's such a healthy way to interact with nature in general, is to see it as an adventure, as a joyful adventure, because, you know, this planet is a garden.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not enjoying this garden that we have, we reap what we sow. So if we're sowing joy, we're going to reap joy. If we're sowing fresh vegetables, mm-hmm. we're going to reap fresh vegetables. And if we're not doing that, then that's not optimal.
mm-hmm, exactly.
So, yeah. It sounds like a powerful expression and movement, and it's got staying power. Obviously, it's been around for a while. How did you find yourself doing this?
Well, many, many years ago, I had some medical issues on my skin. I had acne, and I was trying to figure out how to cure the acne that came on sort of in my adult ages, and I thought, this is very peculiar. So I was going to doctors, dermatologists, and it wasn't working. Then I found a book about macrobiotics, and this book was like, wow, food is really important, and what's medically impossible is often macrobiotically easy. And so I just like zoomed in on it and just studied everything I could about macrobiotics and started healing myself and my complexion, and my whole life shifted. My whole consciousness shifted. And it's never
been
the same.
From what to what? It shifted from what to what?
Well, I'd say it shifted from the standard American diet, which is very sad, SADs, mm-hmm. to this new diet that really creates a whole different blood system and cells of your being that makes you feel more whole, more complete. Your thinking is more whole. You're more aware. You're more connected to life itself.
And you're clearer, I guess. You know, you have the thing that I found when I shifted away from the more processed foods and a heavier kind of diet to something that was lighter and more green and more alive, was there's just a natural process of clarifying in every way that you can say that word and have attach meaning to it.
Yes, uh-huh, that's right, exactly.
So and it was for you, it was macrobiotics, and what does macrobiotics mean to you?
Well, the word means macro, large or great, and biotic means life. So it's to have a great full large life by having good choices and choices that make you feel free. And I was thinking about this a little bit earlier before I knew I was going to talk to you about how I used to make decisions the way I think I was in the mainstream society, like, oh, I need more possessions and I need to make more money so I can have more possessions and more money. And then, you know, something shifted at the same time. My diet was like, I don't really need to have more possessions, or I don't need to have more money. What I need is to enjoy my life.
Yeah.
That's my goal, is to enjoy my life. And yes, I want some possessions, and yes, I need some money, but, you know, how much do you need?
You know, it's funny because, you know, when you think about, as you said, macrobiotic means big life. You know, what does that really mean? If you think about how you invest your time and energy in creating the maximum bloom, the maximum growth and blooming and fruit bearing capacity of yourself as a macrobiotum, it doesn't actually have that much to do with money or, you know, fancy cars or
right.
Or, you know, a 50, 60-inch television. It has to do with breathing fresh air and going, you know, mm-hmm. being in the water. And, you know, I don't know. I was like, mm-hmm. it's a very different thing when you live and align yourself that way. And I gather that some of this had to do with the path that you've taken into yoga.
Yes, yes.
Share a little bit about that.
Well, I've always been very active. I've always liked to do different sports, volleyball, running, hiking, whatever would come up. I would swimming, water ballet. I always liked to be active and move my body. And then at a certain point about 10 years ago, I thought, geez, I'm pretty strong, but I am stiff. And I had a birthday, and I said, this is my new thing. I want to be flexible as well as strong. So I just sorted out as many yoga classes as I could and tried to find a resonance with the style that I liked, and then I just continued studying that. And, you know, I sort of did it the way I did macrobiotics. I sought out the best teachers and created my own school. And learned everything I could from them. So I found the best teachers in yoga, and I continued to study with them, and then you have to share. You want to share
that's
you
part
learned.
Of blooming, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. With those who want to know.
Yes, right, right.
So and I get to teach.
Yeah, so how is this all, this work that you're doing with Common Ground and the way you tend to your diet and the yoga, how does that all come together for you? What is your life like?
Well, it's a great life. It's a wonderful life. I know how to cook my food, so I have my basics, and sometimes I go off and I come back to the basics as a macrobiotic foundation. And I have a full-time job at Common Ground, which I've had for many, many years. It's very, very satisfying and very fulfilling. And then I complement it with teaching yoga at Stanford University through the HIP program, the Health Improvement Program.
Wow, that's fantastic. So any last thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners about Common Ground or the path that you're on or anything like that?
Well, I guess I'd like to give another shout-out to Common Ground, which is my primary focus in my life, is that we want to get share and have people come to the classes and the events, and we're having a class on gray water coming up. Also, one of the founders of Common Ground, John Jevons, who is world-renowned, will be at Common Ground on June 15th for 2 classes. People can register at our website for that. We're going to have a backyard chicken class coming up.
Backyard chicken. See, I want to go to that class. I want to learn about how to keep chickens.
Exactly. Yes. That's going to be, there's a morning and afternoon class, and it's on, excuse me while I turn on my light here. It's going to be at the end of June, John. It's going to be June 22nd. That class always sells out, so we put on a morning class or an afternoon class. And
that
you get to
like
go right to the you get to go right to the teacher's carpool to the teacher's house and see her hen house.
Oh, that sounds like fun. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so if folks want to get to know Common Ground a little bit better or you, where should we direct them?
For Common Ground, our website would be Common Ground in Palo Alto .org.
Okay, Common Ground in Palo Alto .org.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right.
And then I have a blog. It's a WordPress blog, and it's my motto. It's called Feel Better Now.
Excellent. That sounds like great, great advice. Okay. All right, Patricia, thank you so much for joining us on A Shamanic Life, and I'll be seeing you around town.
Oh, very good. And thank you, John, and you're very welcome for thank you, and you're welcome.
Okay. All right, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Living a shamanic life is about more than drumming, rattling, and journeying. It's about living in harmony with the spirits and the earth. Sometimes that means caring enough to take action. If you know someone who is walking the talk and feel we should hear their message, let us know. We love to highlight activists who are doing their part to embrace our spirit-filled world and live a shamanic life. Contact Karen Armstrong, K-A-R-Y-N, at shamaniclife.com or John Carosella, JC, at fireflywillows.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me this evening for part six of our exploration of the vision plan is Annette Wagner, visionary artist and shamanic practitioner, creativity coach. Annette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And we are exploring today offerings. This is the fifth panel. It's side two of the foldout.
Yep.
And you know, I gotta say, I haven't looked at this since it's been on the other side. I haven't looked at it since we painted this thing. So it's my panel looks kind of sparse. So help me out with this. I don't know what to do.
Well, let's set a little context first.
Okay.
So the second side of the vision plan, the four panels on the second side, take us down into a little bit lower depth, and they can sometimes also be a little bit more practical, because this is where we start to talk about how we're going to take things back out into the world.
So when you say lower depth, you mean just more like more grounded?
More grounded, more earth, more real, sometimes more practical. The first side was, remember, passion and purpose, legend, big dream, and beloveds.
Right.
And they set this big container, the context and the container that you're doing your work in. Now that you have this container, now you're going to go into that container further in, deeper.
Okay.
And you're going to start asking some questions about, okay, how does this manifest out in the world?
Okay.
And so the first question we ask is, what are your offerings out in the world? Now, this takes many different forms depending on what it is you started out with on the other side of the vision plan. Sometimes people create these vision plans for their life, and they have some big purpose they want to do with their life. Sometimes people come in and they create them for, I'm starting a new business.
Right.
So, and also the different symbols that people put on this panel can be anything from, I've had people put shelves, and they put all their offerings up like books and boxes up on the shelves.
Uh-huh.
I've had people put doorways, and it's the steps up and through the threshold of the doorway. Sometimes it's a tree, and things are on the tree.
Like fruit on the tree.
Fruits on the tree. Mm-hmm. And it's anything that kind of encapsulates that energy of, I'm offering this back out into the world.
Now, can these offerings be, I was thinking about this morning, can they be intangibles? I mean, like, you know, because I was thinking like offerings of truth, love, compassion, kindness, generosity. You know, we often talk about the practical aspects of, you know, what we offer, sharing our gifts in the world as a way of making concrete these gifts. But I was sort of just wondering about the softer aspect of that.
So one of the things I do encourage people to do is to make it more real. But when someone comes in and they say, one of my offerings is truth, then what I ask them to play with is to start with that, as I am offering my version or my view or my way of enabling truth out in the world, and then to potentially think about an example of how they do it, but perhaps to step out of the traditional box of how they might do it. If they're working at that level of intangibles, then you want to play with it, and like it's raw clay. And instead of saying, well, I'm going to teach a workshop, don't go there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Say truth. Maybe the thing at the other end is sort of workshops or one-on-one sessions or coaching or, you know, healing sessions.
Right.
But see what happens on the way to there when you say, I am offering truth in the world in the form of, and brainstorm.
Ah, okay. So in the form of is actually a catalytic phrase that allows you to go from the intangible to the tangible. You're literally bringing it into form.
Yeah. This is about manifesting what you're offering. So sometimes I have people usually I start with saying, getting people to say, I offer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say what they're, and a lot of times things are very specific. They're, I am offering intentional creativity workshops.
Right.
offering shamanic healing sessions. But when you come in with that higher level, and something's calling you, and it's like truth, then you need to kind of bring it
coax it into form.
Yes, and it's almost like coming through a birthing canal or a tunnel something like that. Is you need to let it take whatever process it needs to take to come into form.
That feels really good to me right now. That feels really good. It's like, oh, what a relief. First of all, what a relief. that I don't, because I don't want to abandon those things as offerings. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I need to sit with them some more and allow them to you know, speak their volume, right? You know, their intensity. But then I wasn't sure what to do with it, right? Like, okay, that's because I know that this panel is about your work in the world, so to speak, right? So the idea that you can say one of my offerings is compassion in the form of, it just feels like there's the idea of the birth canal is really powerful. It's like we start out as spirit and we become incarnate, right? Through that birth canal. The idea that we can enwomb an idea or an ephemeral characteristic or an ephemeral offering for a little while and allow it to come into form and just create space for that to happen is, it feels like it almost makes me a little teary-eyed. I don't really know where that's coming from, but it's like, wow, you can, that's an okay thing to do, and it's a great idea.
Yes. This panel is about bringing things into form. That's really what it's about underneath it all. When I work with people, we do sometimes start with the practical, where we'll say, just write down a menu of what you think you want to do in the world or do that. But there is this whole other layer behind it, which is fed by the other side of the vision plan. Because once you start saying, what's my big dream, that's going to bring in those intangibles. And it ties into your purpose and your beloveds. And they all start working together. It's like this big stew pot. That's my metaphor, is I always think of the stew pot on the back of the stove and I keep tossing things in it. The hilarious thing is I don't actually cook stew. Well, I do in my studio. my studio tables look like stew pots.
It's a studio.
Yeah, right, studio. So it's this, you've got the stew pot of that other side. And so sometimes it does feel like you have to birth this panel a little bit, and you have to kind of sit with it and play with it and walk around the room and let the contractions happen, or whatever metaphor you want to bring in there for how you bring it out. Right. And think about also if you're working with the intangibles and you need to bring them into form, is go back to the intangible, like truth, and really sit with what symbol it represents for you. So think about a symbol that and possibly an intention that go together with them. We thought about symbols and intention on a larger scale, but what's really nice about this process and intentional creativity is to apply it specifically to something. So you move to the offerings panel, you say truth is this intangible that just keeps coming up that somehow I'm supposed to offer something around. So sit with truth and say, what is my intention around this?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even go back down that red thread, you can hold the red thread and go back down the road to meet your muse and say, you know, what is it here? You know, is there a symbol? Is there a gift you can give me or a message you can give me? And just kind of let it play. And then maybe even go back to your panel, and it doesn't have to be a symbol that takes over the whole panel, but maybe that's something else that gets woven into what you put on the panel. And then that symbol can sometimes help draw the what you're going to offer into further form. So it's like you're tugging on the red thread. You tug on the red thread, you get a symbol, you get an intention. And I'm sitting here in front of the microphone, which no one on the other side can see, saying, I'm literally tugging on this red thread, bringing this thing into form.
I like that. So there's a way to stepwise or incrementally coax the abstract into form through intention and symbol.
Yes. Because when you do intention and symbol and you have symbol and word going on, once again, we're going back and we're reactivating both the cognitive and the creative, the right and left sides of the brain, and we're asking them to work together again. And you start to do that. You go back into that place where things happen that, and you can ask and listen and trust, and you get back these answers that aren't what you expect.
Yeah.
So you want to move back into there now within the context of the vision plan, but also within the specifics of, okay, what am I offering around truth? What is the form that this takes for me? You know, for me, what is the form that this takes as an offering out in the world? What is the symbol? What are the words?
And yeah. And so what do you put down on, I mean, I guess you put the symbols down in the words.
Yeah. And you can put them in any form. I the one that I have on this vision plan for myself is a doorway covered in roses. And actually, I was telling John, this particular vision plan, I didn't have completely finished either. And I was sitting with it this morning, very early, and asking some questions because I've been working through really refocusing my work. And I have a new set of teachings called pattern walking that I am bringing into form. And so I wrote down, I offer my teachings of pattern walking, of intentional creativity, of one-on-one coaching sessions and vision plans. I offer a doorway to come stand in and a doorway to step through.
Okay.
So I felt like I had this kind of thread that kept pulling me to say, be more specific, but then at the end, also maybe that more mysterious and tangible.
Yeah, you have both.
I have both. So I ended up, okay, that's what wanted to be written. And I have the words offering at the top, and I have the roses around it. Maybe we'll take a picture and you can put it in your little slideshow at the beginning of the radio show.
And I guess in part because the offerings are this, this moment of concretizing and stepping out into the world. There's a place for,
it's kind of scary.
Well, it brings up all of your issues about being in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
It brings up all the issues. It can bring up all kinds of things for people. For me, it's like, I know I can stand up and teach in front of 50 people.
Right.
I mean, I've done it many, many times. I know
right.
I can do these things, but there's still that, okay, I have new work. I want to share it with the world, or I have this offering I'm being told I need to share with the world. Now what the hell do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of moment of fear of like just owning it and stepping into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of a feeling that I'm experiencing too. That the notion of making concrete, committing. It's committing. It's declaring. It's a declarative statement, isn't it? Your
yes,
offerings.
It is. And there's that thing about you can think about it in your head and think about it in your head, but then when you actually write it down on a piece of paper and make it real in the world and bring those words outside of your heart and put them down, the universe takes notice.
That must be why I haven't done anything yet.
That's what I say. It's you know, we don't actually go around saying our work is safe.
Yeah.
Because if it's not scary a little bit, then you don't know if you're on the right track.
Oh, is that the cue? Is that how you know?
Many times when you are working, especially when I do my intentional creativity classes, yes, somebody will hesitate or stop and they'll say, oh, this is kind of scary. And I'll be, you got it, go.
Yeah, okay. All right. So is there anything else we want to share about offerings, this offerings panel?
No, I think just the reminder that you can go back down the path and sit with it and ask and to remember to tug on the red thread and let it evolve. And also to remember that you can write a couple things and come back to it later.
Yeah.
As other things. These don't have to be sequential. They are organic in actuality.
Right. Cool. All right.
And my new work in the world, Pattern Walking, I will be offering a workshop around that at the end of June, June 29th.
Oh, right. Okay.
So the news will all be going up on my website very shortly.
And that website, again, is?
AnnetteWagnerArt.com.
Cool. Next time, we're going to talk about sharing.
And
that ought to be an adventure. So Thanks, Annette, once again for joining us for a discussion of the vision plan. We'll talk again soon.
Bye.
And we'll be right back.
Do you have a workshop, protocol, or modality that you'd like to explore with our audience? Come and join us on the air. Share why you love it, how it helps us shine, and empowers us to live more fully. Share your inspiration. You never know who might be listening and whose lives you'll touch. Contact John Carosella on Facebook or by email at jc@fireflywillows.com for details.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And joining me for the sensory experience is Gina Carosella. Gina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Thank you for joining me. It's good to have you here. What sensory experience do you have for us today?
Today I have the first of two parts of an exploration of the taboo rose, which is a particular breed of rose of which I am quite fond.
Now, how did we... Tell us about how the taboo rose plays into your life.
We have a large taboo rose bush in my backyard. It's something that my mother planted many years ago, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's my favorite of the rose bushes that we have.
It stands alone. It's a centerpiece in the landscaping here.
Yes, it forms the central visual effect for the area in which it's planted. It's beautiful. It's a large bush, it fills the place of the large, tall centerpiece amongst what is mostly ground cover.
And it's fascinating to me how it's a bush, right? It's not a tree, but it has longevity. It's like it's been with us for a long time.
Yes.
It's seen a lot of, family growth,
Yes, it's been moved around a couple of times. It lasted through our remodel. It spent 2 years in a giant wooden barrel waiting to be replanted as we moved the backyard around.
Yeah.
And I find it to be a very inviting rose bush. It doesn't feel the same as the other roses to me. The other roses don't have the same kind of personality.
Now, so you've decided to do this sensory experience. I mean, when we think of a rose, we think of a lot of sensory aspects to it. But you've chosen to be very specific this time.
Yes, this sensory experience focuses only on the visual. It is 100% sight. And I did that partly because it's not necessarily the first thing people think of when they think of roses. They think of fragrance. They think of smell.
Mm.
And that is something that I would like to get into in part two. But for part one, I wanted to just really dig into the visuals because this is a strikingly beautiful plant.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to share or shall we get right into it?
I think we can get right into it.
Great. Okay, so this is Taboo Rose.
Taboo Rose, by sight. When fresh, lush, wide petals spread, catching light and casting shade. They are vividly, vibrantly, violently red. The color rich, royal, regal. The red of spilled blood and bold velvet. Of fresh ink and the heart of good rubies. The edges fade to burgundy and wine, to bruised purple shadow, or they are dappled strawberry and carnation, faint and subtle like the pattern on a fawn. A single drop of white sits, like glue, where the petals meet. Even more well hidden, in the deepest heart of the rose lies a treasure in bright yellow pollen on curlicue stems. Even without touching, the softness of the petals shows in the almost furred surface. Smooth and rough in the same moment, like velveteen plush. The thin stem and blend dark green and post-sunset sky.
not quite red and not quite purple. Delicate thorns range the length, some so small and fine as to look like hairs, some just enough to prick one's finger, some large and sharp enough to hook my gaze and drag it in, dangerous and tactile even at a distance. When plucked, the flower darkens, the magic crimson fading to subtle scarlet, the shadowed edges curling black. The edges crinkle, rigid and hard, losing their inviting plush far faster than expected. They droop and fold, exposing their delicate white edges, falling gracelessly like the folds in a battered ball gown.
Are you a spiritually inspired musician or performance artist? Join our show for Spirit, Muse, and Song. We'd love to enjoy your work and your story and share it with our audience. Contact us at facebook.com/shamaniclife or send a message to Karen Armstrong, K-A-R-Y-N, at shamaniclife.com or John Carosella, J-C, at fireflywillows.com. We're excited to hear from you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. Next up, Spirit, Muse, and Song. And this week, I'm both humbled and bold, just enough, to introduce some of my own music. The two songs I'll share with you tonight are freshly written. They're still a little raw. Hopefully the spontaneity delights you, while the lack of polish is just charming instead of irritating. But hey, that's show business, I guess. This first song is called Odin Stirs as Odin Watches. I'll share a little bit more about it on the other side. Here it is. Odin Stirs as Odin Watches from my newly invented CD, Strange Awakenings.
Hey.
Still with me. I mean, I kind of liked it.
So a little bit about the song. As I felt the chant rising and began to lay down the vocals, I had this strange sense of somebody watching me from above. As I think I've shared before, I've been doing a bunch of work with the runes and with Odin. And I have a sense for what Odin was like before he took up the runes. A motivated warrior and a clan leader, and a powerful man, but definitely earthbound. And somehow, deep within, I get the sense that he was being pulled towards something more. Not that he knew what he was getting himself into. Anyway, as I was singing, I was catching a similar vibe, like I'm being pulled somewhere. And it was happening actually through the process of singing. The song was actually taking me in that direction, literally as I was singing it. I had no idea what the song was about until I was finished recording. It was really thrilling for me, actually. I had butterflies in my stomach and chills running up and down my back. It was awesome. And I think I'm hooked. I can't wait to do more. So I have to be honest. The reason I'm sharing my music with you at this time is that I had a musical guest cancel at the last minute. So normally I'd be able to find a replacement, but Annette Wagner, whom you've been hearing from over the past few weeks, pretty much just told me, nope, it's time for you to share your own. I mean, she said it more nicely than that, but that's clearly what she meant. So here I am. And actually that's the name of the next tune. And it's kind of a declaration and a plea, and in a way also an acknowledgement. Its full title is called Samuel, Jehovah, Moses, and Me, but you can also call it Here I Am for short. It's about, first and foremost, it's about responding to the call. In the book of Samuel, Samuel hears Jehovah calling and he responds, Here I am. And Moses, when he encounters the burning bush on the mountain, that was Jehovah's way of saying, Here I am, you know, identifying himself and allowing himself to be seen. And Moses responded to Jehovah's call with, Here I am. And then there's me, down here doing my best to show up every day and calling out the Spirit, Hey, here I am. Is anybody up there? So it's a statement of willingness to be seen and to serve, and also kind of a plea, because I still have this fear of being this big fool screaming on the hilltop to an empty universe. No, actually, not actually that, but a universe that looks down on me and says, so? So there's a little emotion in this one, too. But also, to give Spirit credit, where credit is due, as I was singing it, I did feel a presence saying, Hey, you're not alone. Here I am, too. Here I am. So, thanks to Annette, my guest who canceled, and the three fates, Samuel, Moses, and Jehovah, and me, here I am.
Thanks for joining me tonight. It's an honor and a joy to create this show for you, and a privilege to share in the wisdom of all my guests. Here I am.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for our live on-air call-in show, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.